So welcome to the Strange on Purpose podcast.
Welcome to the Strange on Purpose podcast. I'm Izzy. Let's get rolling.
Welcome to the Strange on Purpose podcast. Today I am super, super excited to have on my guest. His name's Don, and he works at Foot Locker. And he's doing so many dope things at Foot Locker, but I really want to focus on how he got to his role at Foot Locker and the steps and maybe the missteps that came along with that journey. So without further ado, Don, thanks for jumping on.
My guy, what up, though? Thanks for having me, bro. Appreciate it. Really appreciate you having me on here, man. Excited to chop it up with you, you know, throw out some game to those who need it, you know, talk about the story a little bit, man. Glad to be here.
Your story is incredible, and I'm like gushing at the opportunity to kind of tell it on the podcast. So I think where we're going to start here is, if anybody that is listening doesn't know who Don is, do you want to give a brief intro as to who you are and what you do?
Yeah, for sure, man. So I'm Don Dudley, raised in Detroit, West Side. What up, though? I'm the marketing director for Foot Locker, what we call our central geo region. So I pretty much oversee localized marketing efforts and community efforts in Detroit, Chicago, Dallas, and Houston. So the role entails a lot of social media. It entails a lot of give back opportunities and finding ways to stay connected to our communities in a really authentic and real way, but also doing things, you know, that are still product focused and apparel focused, release day focused as well. So it's a really all encompassing role that I'm, you know, really, really lucky to have.
Shout out to Alexis for making the intro. Former guest Alexis Stolcigliano. I said your last name right, so you should shout me out if you listen to this. But I'm super excited, because there's your journey has a bit of obviously like the corporate environment, but then also that creative, that freelance creative in a sense. So obviously you didn't just get this role at Foot Locker. Tell me about that journey. Like what were the stepping stones to get you there?
Yeah, man, for sure. So I guess I'll start off by saying, like, I guess it's not, some people don't think it's cool to say that you're a sneakerhead no more or whatever. I'm one for sure. I've always been, you know, really into footwear, really into sneakers for a really long time. You know, I remember, I might be showing my age, man, but I remember when the internet kind of exploded with like sneaker blogs and boutiques, and it kind of really opened up the world to me of footwear. You know, being from Detroit, we didn't really have, I'm not gonna say we didn't have a sneaker culture, but it didn't get the attention or the view that you would see in some of the other cities, right? You know, so we had a couple boutiques, we had, you know, people who, you know, were known for their footwear, but, you know, we didn't have the same kind of like pool that these other cities do, in like New York and LA, when it comes to fashion, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so initially, man, I started off really working in the stores. You know, I was a sales associate at Finish Line, actually. It was my second job. My first job was at Wendy's. I flipped burgers, I made sandwiches, bro, I did whatever, but I was doing it so I could get kicks, you know. Yep. And ironically, one of the dudes I worked with at Finish Line, he had the second job. He worked at the mall. He worked at Wendy's with me. His second job was Finish Line. And I remember going to the mall, because I would go literally every weekend. Even if I couldn't buy nothing, I went for more like product knowledge. I would just go to see all the new shoes that were out, like everything from Jordan releases to Air Force Ones to Flight Condors, all these different things. Like, I was really into retro basketball. And I saw him there one day, and I was like, bro, you work here? Put me on. How do you work in a shoe store? I wanted a sneaker gig so bad. And he pointed out the manager to me, and he was just like, yeah, you got to talk to the store manager, whoop-de-whoop. And, you know, I went up there every weekend until he gave me a job. Well, until he gave me an interview. Then I got the job, because I didn't have any experience at that point, you know. But, you know, I took it really serious, though. You know, I was really fortunate to have that position, even though I was, you know, at the sales associate level. I learned a lot about the sneaker culture. I learned a lot about the product. You know, I was around it all the time. I was working at Fairlane Mall in Dearborn, Michigan. You know, so it was like I was surrounded by it daily, you know, and it was really dope to me. I knew it was something that I wanted to grow and expand. And I worked my way through management. You know, I've managed different locations and stores. I was a stock guy. I've done literally every position. You know, one thing my pops told me when I was younger, he was like, you know, whatever job you get, try to learn everything that you can there. You know, one, just so like you created more value for yourself, right? But also like you're able to discuss and talk to these different people within the company because you understand all the jobs that are there, right? So I took that mentality with me every position or job that I've had since, you know. And you know, as I was working through there, I was, you know, I started to create t-shirts, right? Like my name on Instagram is Stay Lazed On, but that's because I had a clothing brand when I was younger called Stay Laced, right? And the whole concept behind the brand was like, hey, you know, you don't have to dress like a mannequin. You know, you can, you know, you don't have to wear the Jordan shirt and the Jordans you just bought kind of thing. You can wear, I would make shirts that match the colors of popular releases without them being corny, right? Was the goal, right? So it was like, cool, if you want to wear playoff eights, that's sweet, but you don't have to wear a shirt that has a playoff eight on it, you know, kind of thing to match it kind of thing, right? And what I was doing that, I started to really get into the design side of it in a sense of like, yo, I actually really like producing apparel and I really like doing photo shoots and featuring, you know, my product within it. I thought that was fun, you know, but this was before social media got really, really big, right? You know, so it wasn't like that much of a lane for it just yet, you know. So as I was doing that, I started to sell my tees at like sneaker conventions, right? So at this time, SneakerCon didn't come to Detroit yet. They've only been to Detroit like once. So I had to go to Ohio or Chicago or New York when I wanted to go visit, right? Or go, you know, to actually one of these conventions. And that was the first time I like really like put myself out there as like a creative or a designer in a way that wasn't just for like work. And, you know, I ended up going and seeing like all of these brands that I knew from like Instagram, like Original Roughnecks and Bobby Fresh, like brands who like have been making like t-shirts for sneaker releases for like a really long time. And they had these like amazing displays, bro. Like they would have like six tables and banners and tablecloths. I had like my shirts and like a table, just one thing. You know, just like one thing on my table, right? Like, man, I was super underprepared, you know? But either way, my designs were good and people bought them. You know, I was like shocked. I was like, wow, people are actually interested in buying something I made outside of, you know, even though I'm standing next to these like major brands at the time, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so it was really inspiring. I actually got cool with one of the guys from Roughneck, his name is Ruben. He came to my table and he was like, hey bro, like this is this your brand? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, this is dope, you know what I'm saying? And I appreciated him because I'm like, yo, he's like one of the biggest vendors here, and he took the time out before the show started to come check my space out, you know. He wasn't like hating, like who's this kid trying to like, you know, horn in on my t-shirt business, you know, kind of thing. He was like, yo, like this is dope, you know what I'm saying? Like keep going, you'll get better, you know. And it was like, you know, I got to a point where I would see him every time I went to a sneaker convention, and I got better at designing every time. My presentation got better every time. And I just really like took that with me. And, you know, fast forward, you know, I was in school and I didn't, I was actually in school for mechanical engineering, bro.
Really?
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
For like marketing or design or nothing like that. And while I was in school, I was realizing like, man, I was doing the stuff I enjoyed on nights and weekends, you know. So I was like, I was designing apparel, you know, I was managing my own social media page. I started curating sneaker events in the city of Detroit. Again, since we didn't have our own like big conventions like SneakerCon or ComplexCon come into the city, I was like, yo, I want to do something, put my own spin to it, you know. And I got known a bit from just, you know, what I was doing, where I worked, people I knew. So I started like a open mic, like hip hop night that I would do at sneaker boutiques here. So like Bob's Classic Kicks in Midtown Detroit was like one of the first spots to like allow me enter their space to host an event. And we had this one that's at a sneaker store, which is dope. Then it's like two, There was sneaker art on display. There was hip hop performances, poetry performances. You know, we had vendors selling product. It was like a really cool version of like my idea of what SneakerCon could be. And, you know, I saw a lot of success in doing that. It was fun. It got to the point where other people were asking me, you know, how could they perform at the next one? When's the next one kind of thing? And I was like, yo, this is dope, you know. But again, I had to go back to work, you know. And I just got kind of, you know, tired of working on like the retail side of things. Cause, you know, at this point, I have been doing it for, you know, 5+ years, different positions, different locations, right? But I was like, man, I didn't want to stay on this side of the business anymore. You know, the next step for me would have been to be like a retail, like district manager. And I'm just like, dude, I really don't want to do that. And even though I'm doing really well in school, I don't really want to be an engineer either. You know, like I'm good at math and science, and I know that you can make a lot of money. I'm interested in the science behind it, but I asked myself, is this something I wanted to do for the next 40+ years of my life? And the answer was no, I didn't want to do it. I didn't care how much I was making. I knew I wanted to make a transition into doing something marketing related, doing something social media related. So at that time I was like, yo, you know, I'm gonna, you know, run up my graphic design skills more. I went to Wayne State for a little while, went to Western Michigan University for a little while. And they wouldn't let me switch my major to art, right? They was like, oh, you can't take graphic design classes unless you get accepted into the College of Art. And I'm like, How can I get into the College of Art if I've never had an art class to do a portfolio, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. Like, that's what this is for y'all to teach me, right? You know, like I couldn't even take a class to see if I was interested. So I, what I did was I took classes, design classes out of pocket at the Kalamazoo Institute of Art. So it would be just me and like old white ladies on the weekend who didn't have nothing else to do, you know, just kind of hanging out. They were, you know, so I'll be the only like young black kid in the class learning like basic drawing techniques and stuff like that. But I wanted to like invest into the skills I felt I really needed to grow. So it was cool, you know, it was dope. You know, I went like every weekend for like a whole summer until I got better. And, you know, so when I went back to Wayne State, I was able to change my major to graphic design, but I was like, yo, I'm still not really feeling school particularly. It kind of was in the way of what I was doing. And I always tell people education is super important. I never tell people not to, but I do thoroughly believe that it's not for everybody. If you're able to, maneuver your experience in a way, you know, that is beneficial for you. A lot of times school teaches you things in theory that you don't have a lot of practical experience for. Then you graduate and it's you plus 1,000 other kids who graduated with your same major, but No real world experience. And then you get into the career world and it's like, hey, okay, you want this entry level job, you need to have 5 years of experience or X amount of time. It's like, yo, you just graduated, right? Like 5 years ago, you was a kid. You know what I'm saying? Like you just got out of high school. You know, how could you possibly, right?
It's, you know, it's so interesting. Yeah, it's interesting because I got my degree at Cardinal Stritch University up here in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And I was always like, everybody kind of poked fun at me because they're like, damn, Izzy, like you're doing all these internships, but you keep getting C's and B's. And I was like, I don't know why, but I feel like I'm going to be the one person that comes out of this okay, because I'm not just focused on my grades, but school tells you that you need to go get those A's and those B's and focus all your time on school. My advisor was telling me, Izzy, you like as a freshman, don't get a internship because it doesn't do anything for you. And when I was applying for jobs my senior year of college, they're like, wow, you did internships all the way back from your freshman year. It shows that you're committed.
Exactly.
So it's just crazy how like people can take those experiences, and it could be like you said, it's education. I think it needs to be disrupted a little bit, and it's been like that for years, but we're just at a point where we're like, okay, who can take education and run with it, and who can take education and kind of take what's needed and kind of maybe not need that degree, but still have a great career.
Yeah, and to the point that you just said, man, like it has to be disrupted. Like I agree completely. You know, I think the style of learning that's set up is not preparing you. So it's like it's you have to do something, one, to set yourself apart, whether that's a lower position or a internship, just something where you're learning like the practical skills and experience. So when you do get into that career world where you're applying for these jobs, it's like, yo, they can look at it. They're not going to ask you for your report card. You know, they want to know that you can do the job, right? They're investing their time and resources and money into you. So it's like, yo, can you do this? You know, and that's why you see a lot of jobs switching more to the model of like, you know, X amount of time in school or relevant experience, you know, because they understand it's like, yo, well, not everybody, but a lot of companies are starting to understand like, yo, it's levels to this. And, you know, people are coming with different experience levels, you know, but what you really want is people who can do the job, you know. So it's interesting for sure, you know. So me myself, I've actually never finished school. I just started working, right? And again, a lot of my experience is built from just me doing, kind of taking chances and just doing my own thing. You know, you know, after I left Finish Line, there was like a sneaker boutique that opened downtown Detroit. It's called No Joe Kicks. And I was super excited. You know, I knew some of the dudes who worked there, and it was like, you know, one of the like newer things that was coming to the city, which was like really, really hype for me. and I was like, man, like I definitely want to get a gig there, bro. Like to work at a sneaker boutique, that's crazy. And you know, one of my homies ended up sending me a position. He was like, yo, they hiring, you know, for like, you know, for like a sales associate. And at this time, I'm literally like managing my own locations with like Finish Line and stuff, right? So I'm like, man, you know, do I want to take a pay cut just to go work at a boutique when I'm making money here? I'm making bonuses. I'm doing straight, you know. but I was like, I'm gonna get in there and not just be an associate though. I'm gonna get in there and like show them everything that I can do. You know, so instead of just applying, you know, I had prepared like a presentation to show them like, yo, like I could also do digital photography. I can manage your social media page. I can help with buying and product. You know what I'm saying? I made it very clear that I have more value than what they may have just been looking for at the time, you know. And you know, I took a pay cut to go there, you know, just to, so I could say like, yo, I was able to, but when I went there, I was able to do so much more. I was able to do social media managing. I was able to do photography. I was able to host events, you know, and I was able to like really lay down the foundation of what became even more experience for me. you know, so I took that position, and it was dope, you know. Then it was like, yo, that was also the first year that SneakerCon came to Detroit, you know. So, you know, I was able to like really manage our whole pop up at SneakerCon, right? So you know how it's like vendors and different people there, whatever. Like I was able to help create a whole product line, do the photo shoot for it, market it, launch it at this event. You know what I'm saying? And we were able to sell out of a lot of that product. You know, so I had, you know, it's like, oh, sweet. You know what I'm saying? Like I was able to do it. You know, and I, you know, that was, I think that was a big moment because after that, I just had this portfolio of work. You know, that just showed that. It showed what I wanted to do in the sneaker industry, even if it wasn't necessarily a job yet. Like even the job that I have now, this company has only had for like 2 years. So it was like at that time, it wasn't a whole lot of marketing positions, and it definitely wasn't in Detroit, right? You know, it was in like, you know, New York, LA, Chicago, other cities, you know. You know, so I was still working, you know, but again, I had to take a pay cut, right? So I wasn't really making, you know, the money that I felt I should be making at the time comparative to like the work and the value I was putting in. You know, so I was like, yo, I need to do more. I need to do something else, you know. So I had my things I was doing on the side, and myself and a friend of mine, my business partner, his name is Clue313 on Instagram. Shout out to bro. You know, we had decided to start an apparel line together, just creating merch, you know, so not like a full clothing line, just like creating things we wanted to see out there. So it could be something as simple as a t-shirt, it could be a limited edition, a hoodie that we only make 20 of, just, you know, just using our creativity to make things we wanted to see in the market. But it was like, bro, we can't just pop out with a clothing line. We need to build something up first, you know. So we started a sneaker blog, And literally like a month in of us starting that blog, we got contacted by Nike. They were coming to Detroit to visit StockX at the time, because it was StockX was like really, really new then. And like, I'm sure you know, but like StockX headquarters is in Detroit, right? So it was really, really new at the time, and they was like, "Yo, you know, we're doing some consulting with just different, people in the culture, you know, kind of thing. We would love to like just kind of chop it up with you guys, right? You know." So we ended up going to dinner with them and hanging out with them for like an evening. And they were like, "Man, like, you know, the feedback you gave us, they talked to us about some different projects, that were kind of coming up, some things that I've actually seen come to life over the last few years." And they were like, "Yo, like, you guys should come to Portland. You guys should come out and like spend like a week at the campus, you know." And I was like, "What? Say less." You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm there. Like, just let me know when, you know. And it was, you know, so I got to spend like a week out there, you know, and we got
Damn.
to visit a lot of their businesses, their, I'm sorry, a lot of their buildings on campus, which is this Nike Archives. It's a complete rich history there of the sneaker game, as you can imagine. Like, it's literally a campus, dude, you know. Going through some of like their design labs, and you know, we were able to like design our own like Air Force One and stuff. It was like really dope, you know. We just spent a little while out there consulting on some projects. So again, I was still doing, you know, these cool things on like nights and weekends. That wasn't like my job exactly lit, you know what I'm saying? And you know, I was working. I had left Nojo to take like a higher paying position like somewhere else, still kind of in retail, and again wasn't really happy, you know. So I was like, "Man, I need to." I was just applying for stuff to kind of just get out of the situation I was in, you know. And I got to a point where I was like, "Yo, I need to apply to less things and focus more on like where I really want to go." I knew I wanted to be in marketing. I knew I wanted to be in the sneaker streetwear field. And I knew I had the resources and the experience to do so, you know. So I was like, "You know what?" When I switched my mindset to that, literally, I'm a person who like hates LinkedIn. I'm not good at it. I'm just not good at keeping up with it. It's like business Facebook to me. But when I switched my mindset to that, though, it was like, "Yo, like the position I have with Foot Locker, like literally, like appeared. It came up." And I was reading it, and I was like, "Yo, like community marketing manager." I was reading about, what the position entailed, what I would get to do. And when I read it, I was like, "Yo, like that's me. Like, there's no one else who can. There's no one else who can do this. You know what I'm saying? But me, like for sure, I knew it was for me. Because I have a lot of investment in Detroit. I care a lot about the city, and I was in a position where I could give back to it through, code drives, back to school drives, community give back. You know, I was also able to put on a lot of my peers, who are creatives in the city. It was perfect, you know, while still working in the sneaker space. And I really just worked, right? I just really just like did the job, you know, killed it, you know, like pushed the boundaries, pushed back when I felt like something wasn't right, you know, kind of thing. And I, you know, created a good name for myself. And in November is when I was actually promoted, right? From a marketing manager for specifically to Detroit to being a director for this whole geo, you know. So now I'm really fortunate to be in a position where I can put other like-minded people into the position that I had, you know, of being a community marketing manager, you know. So it's something I'm really grateful about and excited about, you know, being able to meet other really passionate people, man. And who care about their city, who care about the culture, and are excited to just build it, you know? So that's really how I got here, man. So it wasn't a straight line. It wasn't easy, you know. It's a lot of failure, you know. But you know, it's got to be just as much effort.
So take me, I'm gonna backtrack a little bit to the mechanical engineering, Don. Obviously you mentioned that you're at this point very strong in math and science, but what really pushed you to study mechanical engineering?
So one, I was good at school, right? Then Detroit is like Motor City, you know?
Yeah.
So I have a passion for cars for sure, right? You know, then also I would go to the auto show every year when it came to Detroit. So it wasn't far off that my passion for, you know, cars and engineering would align. It was more so something I just enjoyed, but didn't really want to do for a living.
Yeah.
Right. I had a class, bro, it was called plastics. And the goal of that course was that you should be able to look at anything made of plastic and I should be able to tell you what it's made out of, like the chemical breakdown of it. Right. And I was like, why would I want to do that? Like it's kind of interesting. Right. But it's also like, yeah, like I'm straight. That's not what I want to do. I'm much more interested in, you know, I would be at the College of Engineering and I would go past a class where they were doing like screen printing, you know, or something that wasn't necessarily super creative, but it had a creative side to it. Like there was some design involved, right? And I'm like, yo, like that interests me more. That's cool, you know? Then also it's like, I would be, not saying that there are no engineers who are like fresh, right? But I'll be like one of the only kids walking around there with Jordans on, or you know, these sneakers. You know those memes where it's like somebody at a party and it's like they don't know I'm wearing like kind of thing. It would be like that. I'll be like, these people don't even know what's happening right now. You know, but I knew I had that passion, dude, for something else. And I just had to find a way for it to align so that it wasn't you know, it wasn't just a hobby for me. It was something I could make into a lifestyle.
That's super dope. I love that. You also mentioned through this role, you have the ability and you're putting people on for their communities now. So when we talk about Detroit, what's like to somebody that's never visited Detroit, what's so beautiful about Detroit in your eyes?
For me, it's the history of it. You know, Detroit has a really rich history of Black culture, of music, of art. And it would be something that I was immersed in. You know, I would go to art gallery opens. I'm going to poetry nights. I'm going to, you know, all these different like cultural events in the city. And, you know, I didn't feel like Detroit got the same love that the other cities do. You know, it's like, yo, there's an art scene here, too. Yo, there's a sneaker culture here as well. And the people just need that same platform, you know, to be elevated on, you know. So being a part of that and seeing it grow has always been really important to me. And I'm really proud of, you know, being able to contribute to the culture in a really genuine way. You know, so when I see people from my city winning, I'm excited to put them on, you know, I'm excited to champion them, you know, kind of thing. Cause I understand that, you know, one thing I say almost every morning is community, not competition. And, you know, one is because I care about my community, but two, also understand that the concept of, you know, crabs in a barrel is very real. You know, a lot of people, they feel like, you know, if they see somebody else winning or eating in the same field as them, that it's taken off of their plate. Mm-hmm. When it's like, you have to think about the bigger picture. If there's like, yo, there's a bunch of emerging photographers coming from Detroit. What's going to happen is more people are going to start looking for that in Detroit. They're going to say, like, oh, Detroit has a great industry for that. I'm going there. I'm looking for that from that place. So now there's more work coming to the city, as opposed to you tearing other people down. If you open it up, now there's more and more for all of us to eat, you know? So if it's like, yo, if there's another clothing brand that comes out, you know, I co-own a sneaker cleaning brand in Detroit, you know, like we're not the only one in Detroit though, you know, kind of thing. So it's like, we don't talk down or necessarily compete with one another. It's just like, yo, like now there's a culture of getting your sneaker cleaned in Detroit that we can all kind of like feed into and grow, as opposed to just saying like, yo, well, that's a whole different brand, a competitor, I'm not rocking with them. It's like, yo, no, like that's cool. They go do their thing. It's not gonna look like ours. It's gonna be a different aesthetic, you know, kind of thing. We go have our own thing going on. We go move different. You know, nobody can move the way that you move. or whatever. But it's having that mentality that's like, yo, like it's enough bread out here for all of us to eat, right? So it's like you really just have to like consider that when you're thinking about the industry that you're in and how it's growing within your market. So Detroit is it's a lot that's beautiful to me, you know, but it's definitely the culture, it's definitely the people, you know, and it's definitely you know, it's something that I love watching grow.
You fascinate me. I think it's so dope that obviously every morning you're thinking about community and you're thinking about just ways to uplift the people you surround yourself with, which is super dope. And right now, like, it's not something that a lot of people are doing, unfortunately. And you mentioned, I want to pose this question. You have two people of color on this episode. Do you think that the problem of, or the, yeah, I'm gonna use the word problem. Do you think the problem of kind of gatekeeping something or saying something's whack because it's the same thing that somebody else is working on or that you're working on, do you think that comes from generations of just like only one person can do that, a type of person can do that, specifically a white person can do that?
Yeah, so I hate the concept of gatekeepers, right?
Yep.
I think it hurts and it stifles the creativity, like across the board, whether you talk about music industry, you talk about fashion industry, things have to change and things are going to change, and I think that to be honest with you, like I feel like if you're like an OG in your culture or your industry of what you do, I feel like you have like a responsibility to steward in the next generation.
Yep.
So yes, I do think that gatekeeper mentality hurts because there has been a concept of like, yo, I need to be the only one. If there's another one, it's hurting me, it's hurting my business. Yes, or maybe it has been something that has been reserved or black people have been like excluded from. I definitely see all of those things. Like even with myself, I've had a lot of experience with that. When I was trying to host my very, very first events, I went to different places that they shut me down, right? I went to different people for sponsors, and I wasn't even asking them for money to sponsor my event. I was just asking for presence. I was just trying to bring the culture together. So free sponsorship, free exposure, free, you know, networking. Didn't ask for no money, didn't ask for nothing. You know, I have people who never replied to me when I reached out to them. And then as I elevated through the culture for my own through my own work and my own memes, a lot of those same people are on my line now, you know, kind of thing, you know, are trying to tap in with me. Hey, Don, what's good? You know, they didn't, you know, but I also understand like I understand business in the sense of like everybody is not a peer, everybody is not a friend, everybody does not think the way that I do. So I don't hold the grudge in the sense of like, oh no, bro, don't talk to me because you didn't, you know, you didn't reply to me 5 years ago or something like that. You know, I'm like, no, it's cool. You know what I'm saying? I understand. Like, you didn't have a reason to now. I'm gonna still consider that and keep you at a certain distance, but you know, I'm not gonna let anyone take advantage of me, you know, kind of thing. So I think when it comes to that mentality, one thing I'll say, because I would get a lot of questions about this, is like, how did you do this or how did you start that? You know, like even before I had my position with Foot Locker, when I was just doing events on my own, what I would tell people is that you don't, the gatekeeper mentality is just that, it's a mentality. It's not, in my opinion, it's not real. So I think if you want to do something, you have an idea for something, you have to just do it. You might not have the resources or the support that you want, but if it's something that you want to see, start. Or do, you just have to figure out how to do it. Somebody says no, or somebody's not rocking with you, and you just abandon that idea or that thought. In my mind, did you really ever want to do it? If that's all it took for you to you know to kind of end that, it's like, did you really want to do it, right? Or even when it's not a gatekeeper, even if it's just a friend, like, oh, I want to start a business with my best friend, and they're dragging their feet because it's maybe not something they really want to do, so you just never do it. It's like, well, it's just as much your fault now, right? You know, kind of thing. So I think that when it comes to the gatekeeper mentality, it's like, sweet, if you have people you want to tap into or get support of and they're there for you, dope. But I think that if they're not giving you that you can't quit there, you know, kind of thing. I think you do need to critique yourself though and think about why am I not getting the support. Sometimes it could just be jealousy. Sometimes your stuff is literally just not that good, and you need to go back to the drawing board and figure out how to make it better. So it's levels to it for sure. But I think that when it comes to like the gatekeeper mentality, it's like you have to overcome that by doing, you know. So if it's something that you're really passionate about, you got to pursue that.
You mentioned obviously you had people not answer your emails or your texts or calls or anything like that. When you're first starting out, obviously it's a tough thing to kind of deal with mentally, and especially when you're just so passionate about something. So how did you battle through that?
Yeah, I battled through it by, I guess I was so passionate that I was like, well, this is gonna happen, you know, like one way or the
Love
other. You know what I'm saying? I'm like,
that.
I just need to figure out something else. And I did think about, I took a step back and thought about why I wasn't getting that, right? So if it was like, yo, oh, I get it. You know, I thought back on some of the conversations when I went to places and asked if I could have my event there. And they would ask me stuff like, is this your first event? Have you done this before? You know, and I'm there, I'm bright-eyed and I'm enthusiastic, but I get it. They're taking the risk. Why would I want to do this event with this kid? I never met him before. You know what I'm saying? I've never even seen his work before, right? So it's like, yo, I have to go out and create the work. I have to give. It's a difference between knowing your worth and proving it, right? So if I'm like, yo, like I know I'm the best at something, it's like, that's cool. Prove it though. How do I know that? You know what I'm saying? It's like you walk up to me and tell me like you're the best videographer in the city, but if I go to your page and I don't see none of your work, you don't have a website, you know, or something like that, where I can't validate this. You know what I'm saying? Kind of thing. I'm taking the risk by spending my money or my time on whatever this project is, and you know, how am I going to be certain that it's coming back? You know, so one thing I'll ask my friends a lot is like, yo, like if the opportunity came that you think you're waiting on, like if that one thing you need to happen right now, you needed to meet an A&R or a record producer that you really like or something like that, or you just needed that one shot. If you got it right now, would you really be ready for it? And as you could imagine, most people's answer is yes, right? They're like, of course, I would be so ready. But it's like, no. That isn't the question. Is around, do you want this to happen right now? The question is around, are you ready for it? Right? So if you're if you're a rapper or a singer and you meet Kanye West, right? And can you go to your YouTube page and show him the quality of work that you're able to put out? Can you play your music for him on a dope format that they can listen to? You know, like followers are flexible, they come and go, but like the quality and the content of what you want to do and what you put out, that says something, you know. So like whether I had 4,000 followers or 400, you know, kind of thing, I had to consider that like this is what my platform looks like, right? And it's like when I realized I wasn't getting feedback or attention or collaboration through some of the people I wanted to, I was like, oh, it's because they don't see the value in it. They don't see the value in me yet. You know what I'm saying? So I had to figure out ways to change that, you know, and that comes from pouring more into yourself, you know, so expanding the things you don't know, you know, like my very early designs were not very good, you know, like I had to sit back and look at that. I had to get better at it. So I took my time to figure out, like, yo, like, I'm gonna spend a few hours on YouTube learning how to use Illustrator, you know, kind of thing. Or it's like, yo, like, I wanna learn how to design logos. Cool. You know what I'm saying? I designed logos and flyers for a sneaker boutique in Ferndale, Michigan, you know, to the point where I was even, when I didn't have a job, I was able to accent my income from doing graphic design on the side. I didn't have a degree. I don't have a degree in graphic design. You know what I'm saying? Kind of thing. But it's like I use those opportunities to get better. You know, I think so. It's like you can't go into things thinking like anybody owes you anything either. You know, you have to consider like, yo, what is the reason I'm not getting this? Is the quality of my work not there? Am I not doing something that I could be doing? And that's ongoing. Even when you are there or growing or whatever, or even if you think you're in a good spot, you still need to critique yourself and continue to be better.
When we obviously in journeys, whether you're a young professional, student, or even right now in your current journey, there's a lot of comparison. And you talk to certain people and they think comparison is terrible, and you talk to other people and they think it's great and it's something to learn from. So if you do compare yourself to people, who is it? And this can be either personally or professionally.
Yeah, so I definitely compare myself. I think it's something that we all kind of do. I think it's just like nature, like as people.
Yeah.
And I hear you, and it's like some people are like, no, you shouldn't do that. But I look at people who I like. I compare myself to people I admire, like within the industry, even if it's something that I'm not necessarily in, I find something to admire about them and compare it that way. You know, so my favorite rapper is Currency. Lots of people like Currency, but I love his music because I love his drive, right? He was able to create a lane for himself by just being himself, right? he was able to establish that. You know, he came from an era where, like, the music he was making was not, people weren't ready for it. They weren't listening to it yet. You know what I'm saying? So he was on Cash Money and No Limit. He doesn't sound anything like those guys. Yeah. But he found real successes when he decided to just move on his own and create his own lane. So he makes the music that he wants to make now. He makes his own apparel that he wants to make, and he wants to see now. It looks, the stuff his brand puts out looks like how he dresses, you know, kind of thing. It's like you can tell it's very authentic. And so when I think about things sometimes, like, yo, am I doing something just for bread or just for money, or am I staying true to who I want to be? I'm comparing myself to people who I admire in those ways. You know, I think about, you know, people frown upon having a 9-to-5. They're like, yo, if you really you're an entrepreneur, you just got to jump off the porch and do it, you know, kind of thing. What they don't tell you is that everybody's journey is different. So what works for them might not work for you. So it's like, yo, I can't compare myself to someone who's been like, oh, I've actually worked in corporate for 10 or 15 years. I saved up a bunch of money. I was able to quit my job or do whatever because, right, you maybe you had a six-figure job for the last 10 years and you were able to do and maneuver in ways that maybe I'm not ready for, you know. But then I look at people like Virgil Abloh and Yuen Ambush. They're people who have their own brands, right, you know, Off-White and Ambush. But they also have these very corporate design positionings with, like, you know, Virgil also does Louis, you know, Yuen Ambush also does Dior, jewelry design for Dior, right? You know what I'm saying? So, like, they have their own brand, they're able to maneuver in their own space as an entrepreneur, but they also have this position or this career in which it accents the field that they're, you know, creative in as an entrepreneur. And that's something that I also compare. I'm like, yo, it's dope. Like, one, I love the sneaker culture. I'm able to have this corporate positioning in it. But I also am able to invest and use the money I make from my job and my career to invest into my sneaker cleaning business, my apparel business, and I can grow those at my time. So, like, for a lot of us as minorities, we don't have, not all of us, right? But we're working toward having better credit and finances. So, like, yo, I consider my job my small business loan.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, yo, I'm able to pour this into everything else I want to do. You know what I'm saying? I'm able to export the things I want to creatively that I might not be able to do at work, but I'm also able to leverage the relationships and people and the things I do for work, you know, in my entrepreneur life, in my job, you know. So I think it's okay to compare yourself, but I think you also have to be real with yourself, you know what I'm saying? And where you are as a person, both in your creative and in your professional career.
When we obviously we started the podcast off with people using and not using the sneakerhead term, but I'm going to use it. When you call yourself a sneakerhead, what was the shoe that really did it for you?
So my favorite sneaker is Jordan Retro Sixes. Particularly okay. The varsity red color, not the infrared, but the varsity red, the darker color. I think they came out around 2010, maybe was the most recent one. So I actually have a pair, but obviously they're like 11 years old, right? So I can't really wear them. But I love that I had that shoe in my collection. Like retro basketball is what inspired my whole thing. So there used to be this website, right? It was called The History of Flight. It was a Jordan website, right? And you could click on the different Jordan model numbers, and it would show you the design history behind them. So it'd be like, oh, hey, like the Jordan 6 has this tab on the back, but it's also like resembles the spoiler off the Porsche that Jordan drove at the time. And I was like, what? That's crazy. Or like, oh, like there's this tribal print on the bottom that resembles African art. You know, like I would like nerd out over it. Like, yo, like this is so cool to me. You know what I'm saying? And seeing like colorways inspired by different moments along like his basketball career's journey. Like, oh, like UNC blue and all these different things. You know, I was like, man, this is crazy. Like, you know, and I saw that that was a common theme between like sneaker designers, right? That they're really, really designers. You know what I'm saying? It's like they're putting a lot into the materials and the fabrics that they use, you know. But Jordan sixes were for sure the shoe that made me like, yo, yeah, I love this, bro. You know, kind of thing. It's also like retro basketball sneakers, man. Like just that 90s era of shoes. Like some people don't like them because they're bulky or they're outdated looking. It's whatever. I'm one of the people who, and people are like, you're not tired of buying the same shoes every time they come out. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'll buy fire red fives every time they drop them. I'll buy Jordan threes every time they come out. I don't care. I will want all of them. Like I got like two or three pair of certain things, you know, from, you know, every different retro or whatever, you know, kind of thing. And it's like, I love it. Like I'm good. You know, what did they say? One to rock, one to stock. So if I got a pair of Bred 11s and, you know, from the older release, you know, the newer release that comes out, I wanted to get that too. So it's like, yo, I can put my old ones up and I can rock these. You feel me? So it's like, nice. For me, it's ongoing.
I feel it. I got one more question for you.
Yes, sir.
What makes you strange on purpose?
I think it's strange on purpose because I can admit to nerding out over things like sneaker designs and colorways and not feel no type of way about it. Right? Like I'm intentional with it. I love it. But also I think just being being unique and being true to yourself, it takes a lot of purpose in that. And you know, it takes a lot of like confidence in that as well. But I also think those are the things that make us, you know, unique and creative and able to explore the different things that we want to do, you know. So whether it's a small business, you know, kind of thing, whether it's, you know, a career that you want to pursue, you got to find that part of you that's strange, right? Or different, you know, but really like feed into that, you know, and really like dive into that, you know, because it's something that nobody else has. It's something nobody can take from you.
I love that. Where can down where if somebody really vibes with this episode, where can people find you? Where can people check out your work?
Yes, sir. Hit me up on Instagram, man. Just stay laced underscore dime. You can also follow a lot of my brands or pages that I like work on or manage are within my bio, but definitely follow me there and follow me at Clean Sneaker Care and Wins Brand. Again, both of those are in my bio, so you can check it out. You can see the work that we're doing on the more of my entrepreneur side, as far as like the work that I do with Foot Locker. Right now, the main pages you should be checking out are Foot Locker Detroit and Foot Locker Chicago. You know, the Detroit page has been up for some time, so you can see a lot of the dope content, events, and community opportunities that we've been able to do there. And a lot of new stuff is coming from the Chicago page as well. So definitely check those out.
Dope. Well, Don, I appreciate you jumping on the Strange on Purpose podcast, and I'm excited to see how things go post-COVID.
Man, me too. Me too. Things are opening up a bit, you know. Things are opening up a bit, but definitely excited to get past this at some point, man. So I hear you.
Thank you for listening to the Strange on Purpose podcast. As always, if you enjoyed this episode, or any of the episodes before, please like, review, follow the podcast on Instagram, drop a review on Apple or Spotify or wherever you check us out. Helps the podcast grow immensely. So I appreciate you. I could not do this without you.